Boker Tov. For those that don't know, that's good morning in Hebrew. If you forget what it is in Hebrew, Boker Tov, just say Boker Tov. That's the Eastern way of saying good morning. For those that don't know, who gets my worthy briefs? Well, a bunch of you guys do, but a bunch of you guys don't. It's free. You can't get cheaper than free. For those that don't know, I send out a daily devotion along with the news. We run a news agency. I started it way back in 1999. We have journalists in Jerusalem, in Rome, in Budapest, and throughout the United States. And we cover what's happening around the world. The crazy thing is, as I've been doing the news, it's much harder to do the news these days. Would you believe there's a lot of fake news? It is really crazy. The very first words out of Jesus' mouth about the last days was, "Take heed that no man deceive you," which means that we're surrounded by a lot of liars. So the next time you turn on the news, you realize, hey, that's not the truth. They're just proving the words of Jesus true. I really love divine appointments. Has anyone ever experienced a divine appointment? Oh, come on now. Divine appointments are really special because when divine appointments happen, you know it's going to be something special. Divine appointments, we have literally been on the road for over 2 years now since the beginning of COVID. And the crazy thing, we've done over 100,000 miles and over 300 meetings. And we've never had a weekend where we didn't have a meeting except for two. Two weekends where we didn't have a meeting. One weekend, I told my wife, I can't believe we don't have a meeting. That was the weekend we got COVID. The other weekend that we didn't have a meeting, my wife had a 7-inch cyst removed. And all of a sudden, the Lord kind of has been directing us because I haven't been booking meetings more than 1 or 2 or 3 weeks out. And for those that don't know, we were in Florida about 3 weeks ago, or maybe 2 weeks ago, when a hurricane came. We actually spoke the night the hurricane hit at the center where the hurricane came. And the hurricane basically forced us to start driving north. That happened to be on election night. And I told my wife, I'm not sure if I really want to be in the Northeast during the elections because I really thought we were going to have a red wave and you could have riots in the streets. I mean, for those that won't remember, 2016, there were riots in Washington, D.C. And I thought to myself, I don't know if we should, So I started driving and then it became the red dud. And I said, I guess we're going to be at home for Thanksgiving. And I really love being home for Thanksgiving because Thanksgiving in Israel is really, really different. I will explain my first Thanksgiving in Israel. We had just moved to the country. It had been a crazy time for us. For those that don't know, my daughter was born blind. Praise God, she got healed. For those who don't know, I was almost on a bus bombing, and the Lord basically prompted, do not get on this bus, and the bus blew up. I got on the bus behind, and the bus in front of me that I normally rode blew up in front of me. My entire website got hacked. And for those that don't know, I've been doing this for 20 years. I basically lost my entire mailing list. I mean, so many crazy things happened. And for my first Thanksgiving, it was really special because, I had so much craziness happen. So I go to the grocery store, and I order, it's called Hodu Shalem. Hodu is turkey, Shalem is a whole turkey. And they looked at me and said, you want a whole turkey? And I'm trying to explain to them, in Israel, there's no concept of a whole turkey because the ovens aren't even big enough to hold a turkey. They don't have, the ovens in Israel are really small. They're you couldn't really fit a turkey in it. And so I ordered my turkey. And I go to pick it up. And when I go to pick it up, they said, well, we ran out of chicken, so we decided to cut your turkey up. I said, what do you mean you cut my turkey? I made a reservation for a whole turkey. They obviously took the reservation. They didn't understand what a reservation meant. So all of a sudden now, I have no turkey. And you can't have Thanksgiving without turkey, right? So I'm telling my father-in-law this, and my father-in-law is like one of those types of people that is like, I know a guy. You ever met the person like, I know a guy? So he tells me, I know a guy. And he lives in where the Shuk is. For those that don't know, who's ever been to Israel? Who would like to go to Israel? We have actually a tour. I have to tell you, I really don't know how much time we have left before we can freely travel. And I want you to imagine yourself as an eternal being. Because, you know, this life is going to end, and we're going to go right into another life. But can you imagine for 1,000 years being able to brag and talk about how you were in Israel before the Lord came back and how different it was? You can't do that unless you actually go. So I'm telling you, there's limited time. We have limited space. If you would like to go with people that actually live in the land that won't give you a touristy tour, but actually a real-life tour, come with us. But now back to my story. So my father-in-law said, I know a guy. And he lives near what's called the Shuk. It's in the marketplace in Jerusalem. It's like a third-world type marketplace. And there he goes, coming out with a plastic bag. And I kid you not, this was the most deformed, thin-looking turkey, fully feathered, with a neck still attached, and was frozen lopsided. I looked at this thing, and I said, how am I going to make a Thanksgiving meal out of this? I have to wait till it thaws, and I've got tweezers, and I'm plucking the feathers. And in Israel, it was really crazy, as we just moved in this apartment, so you know, it's not like we carry around sharp knives or anything. And this knife that I had, you know, I'm sitting there trying to hack its neck off. And the neck was like Arnold Schwarzenegger or something. Because I was hacking that thing for, it felt like 10 minutes before I could break the neck off. So I have to say that now when I come to America and I have a turkey, I'm very delighted that it's very easy over here. The crazy thing is when I put that turkey in the oven, it basically couldn't even fit. The skanky little turkey wouldn't even get into this little oven. So, like I said, it is very different. So, would you believe it? I've only done about 3 Thanksgivings in Israel. Usually, we're in the States during Thanksgiving. Let's see. Okay, I'm going to jump. For those that don't get our Word of the Briefs, it's free. It doesn't cost anything. Now, if we're going to talk about Thanksgiving, especially Thanksgiving in America, you got to have to go and understand just a little bit of history. For those that don't know, right, Christopher Columbus came to America in 1492. Now, 1492 was a very pivotal year in Spain. King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella had basically told Jews either convert or die or flee. And that same year, a bunch of Orthodox Jews fled, and the only safe place at that time was in Holland. And so there was a lot of people that had moved to Holland. The Sephardic Jews had moved to Holland. And before the pilgrims came to America, they were persecuted in Great Britain. And the Anabaptists and the Puritans fled to Holland, and they were in Holland in 1607. And they found themselves with a bunch of Sephardic Jews that had also been persecuted. Now, these two groups meet in 1607. At the same time, there was something very crazy happening in America. The New World has been discovered, and now there are people that are fishing off the coast of Massachusetts. And there's an Englishman whose name was Captain Hunter, who had come off the coast of Massachusetts. And not only was he fishing and trading with the Indians, he actually took some of them and took some of them as slaves. One of the slaves that he had took was a guy named Squanto. Now, Squanto was taken back to Malaga, Spain, where he was bought by a monk. Back then, ready, there were monks or believers or Christians that were buying people as slaves to set them free. So he had bought Squanto to set him free. In this course of being set free, he teaches them about the Lord, teaches them about Christianity, and he comes to faith. Now Squanto, in his interesting time, he goes ahead and eventually makes his way back to England. Where he is bought, he's working in the stables of a young man named John Slanley. And he worked there as someone in the barns, and he actually learned English. Now, John Slanley is so impressed with Squanto and wants to help him along that he actually sends him to the New World. It was actually Squanto's home. And when Squanto actually gets to the New World, he arrives, and when he arrives, he finds out his entire village has been wiped out. People theorize that they got wiped out because of smallpox. So when he's there, he's like, what am I doing here? My entire community has been wiped out. I don't know a single person here, and now he's a lone Indian. At that same time, there is a boat, three boats actually, leaving, and they're heading to Virginia. And somehow or another, they wind up off the coast of Massachusetts. And off the coast of Massachusetts in the Plymouth Rock, all of a sudden, the pilgrims land. And when the pilgrims land, they land to a world that they don't see an English settlement. They don't see anything English. They're probably wondering themselves, how do we get so off track? Well, as at that time, they run into a pilgrim whose name was Somerset. And Somerset realizes they speak English, and he knows an Indian that speaks English. His name is Squanto. So Squanto comes and is actually able, can you imagine an Indian coming out of the woods speaking English? An Indian that has nothing left to go back to. He can only go forward. And now he teaches them how to survive there. He teaches them how to hunt, how to fish, how to plant corn. And as a result, Governor William Bradford asked him to serve as an ambassador to the Indian tribes around. And Bradford accredited Squanto for the survival of the Pilgrim colony. And he saw that without God's providential hand in providing Squanto, the colony would not have survived. Squanto had gone through this entire life, probably wondering to himself, what is going on? What have you got me on? What kind of trip do you have me on? It's almost like the journey of Joseph, where Joseph was sold into slavery as a young man, and he's wondering, what is he doing here? And then he gets falsely accused, and he's thrown into prison for 7 years. He's like, what am I doing here? And he's elevated up. And so here was Squanto, and he's elevated up. And the pilgrims, we came to America, they came to a purpose. And the purpose was for the glory of God and the advancement of the Christian faith. That's in the Mayflower Compact of November 11th, 1620. We have so much to be thankful for. And when the pilgrims got together, when they were celebrating Thanksgiving and they were celebrating their survival, they were celebrating and they were celebrating something special and they were celebrating something they had learned from the Jewish people back in Holland. It's called the Festival of Sukkot or the Festival of Tabernacles. The Festival of Tabernacles is the festival of ingathering. It's the festival that you get after you get all the produce of the land, and you get together, and you have a huge feast. And so here it was. They were given a great thanks. There was 90 Wapapag Native Indians joining 53 pilgrims in the feast, and they have this feast, and it's not one day. It's for 3 days. And they're celebrating what they could understand as a harvest festival. They were trying to associate it with the Feast of Tabernacles. And if you think about the things that are connected, right, both involve pilgrims, right? It was the pilgrims of the New World, but in order to go to, in Israel, there's three pilgrimage feasts. The feast that Jews are required to go up to Jerusalem, the Feast of Passover or Pesach, the Feast of Shavuot, or what you would know as Pentecost, and the Feast of Sukkot or Tabernacles. You're required to make a pilgrimage to Jerusalem 3 times a year. And so here it is. They both involved pilgrims. They both started out with people groups that had been persecuted, that had to escape. They both involved a harvest and the festival of ingathering. They both happened in the fall. They're both based on the biblical command to give thanks. They're both based around family and communal gathering. They're both involved in lots of food and feasting. And hilariously, and I know this is crazy, you know how words are very interesting. The word hodu in Hebrew is to give thanks. It's one of the words to give thanks. The word hodu is also the same Hebrew word for turkey. That is interesting, right? So here it is. They celebrate hodu. They celebrate Thanksgiving. And Thanksgiving is one of those things that is a relationship. It's a relationship, it's distinctly a human activity because, ready, we give thanks to God. It is this relationship that he goes ahead and is sharing with us and we're reminding ourselves what he's done for us. Because the whole thing about giving is God gives and we receive. And thanksgiving comes from the word yada, which means to confess. And yada, confess, is so here was Israel giving thanks to God. Now, another word for Thanksgiving is todah. And todah comes from the word yada. Now, yada is connected to another word, yada. Now, yada and yada are the same. They sound the same. They're spelled a little differently. One is thanksgiving and one is intimacy. So thanksgiving in Hebrew, right, is confessing to God, thanking God, and in this relationship, we are now developing an intimate relationship with God. So to thank God, the Hebrew style is to confess who he is. The confession alone is our way of describing the fact that he gives and we received. He saves and we are the saved. He loves and we are the beloved. So there's this relationship. And this passage that I'm getting ready to throw up here, this passage here is one of these passages that is expressing the thanks of God. In the first three verses, we have an interesting dialogue going on because it gives you a picture of the triunity of God. We have, give thanks to the Lord for he is good. And you'll see this phrase repeated over and over again, for a steadfast love endures forever. Give thanks to the God of gods. A different word. The first word was Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, or what you would say Yehovah. The second word is give thanks to the God of gods. This is Elohim, for a steadfast love endures forever. The third word, give thanks to the Lord of lords, Adonai, for his love endures forever. Gives you three different kind of pictures of God, three different names of God. It continues on. Give thanks to the Lord who does great wonders. Give thanks to the Lord for he made the heavens. Give thanks to the Lord who spread the earth above the waters. And he goes through, and what he's confessing to him is the creation. So the first step is understand that you are created, that you're created in the image of God. And you are created in the image of God, and God doesn't make mistakes. I mean, people, you know, if you don't understand that you are the beloved, you are the beloved that God had actually understood from the foundation of the world. He actually already understood you before you were even born. And that now we are given thanks that he has created not only the world around us, but he's created us. For his steadfast love endures forever. Give thanks to the Lord who struck down the firstborn of Egypt. And now the children of Israel are going back now to all the victories that God had provided. Because if you don't remind yourselves of the victories that you've had in your life, you can go ahead and get depressed. You read in the Bible, Mary, oftentimes he said, and the Lord caused Mary to come to remembrance. These things that Mary remembered. Mary actually went back to the birth of Yeshua. Mary went back to the different times in her life where God had worked out different things. Thanksgiving is also recalling back to us the different ways that God has worked in our lives. If you don't understand that God has got us on a purpose and that God has us on divine appointments and God has us going in and out and weaving our way through history, you'll not understand who you truly are because you're kings and priests of the Most High God. You're called from the foundation of the world to preach this word, good word of the kingdom. The Lord is coming back and he's getting ready to establish his kingdom. He's getting ready to establish something. And he's called us to be part of this. Now, with Israel, brought Israel out from among them with a strong hand and outstretched arm, for steadfast love endures forever. The outstretched arm, this is one of the interesting mysteries in Hebrew that you probably won't hear inside of a Gentile church, but it's a mystery. If you can really grab hold of this. Now, your arm, right? What's your name, ma'am? Go ahead.
Gail,
don't worry. Now, Gail, if I were to go down to Gail, right, and I were to slap Gail, you slap me back, good. She slapped me back. But if I were to go down and slap Gail, I couldn't say, well, my hand just did that. The hand only does what the head tells it to do. The hand becomes completely subservient to the head. This passage here, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm. When the children of Israel led out of Egypt, and led out during the Exodus, God says, I have redeemed you with an outstretched arm. Right? Redemption is by his arm. Continue on. He says, behold, Jehovah will come with a strong hand, and his arm shall rule for him. His arm shall rule for him, and his reward is with him, his work before him. And he shall feed his flock like a shepherd, and he shall gather his lambs with his arm. Okay? We're going through some passages here. My righteousness has gone near, and my salvation has gone out, and with my arm I shall judge the people. and on my arm they shall trust. It says here, and the Lord has bare forth his holy arm before the peoples, and they shall see, right? That word salvation, and the earth shall see the salvation of our God. That word salvation in Hebrew is Yeshua. That's Jesus' Hebrew name. With my arm, right? My arm is going to be completely revealed. In this passage here, Isaiah 53, the Jewish people aren't even allowed to read this passage. This is a passage that is kept away, that is kept hidden from the Jewish people. Now, I cover journalism, and I covered the news. And a lot of the news that I cover is out of Taiwan, because obviously we're in a conflict with Taiwan. And what's interesting to me is what the Taiwanese pastors tell me. The Taiwanese pastors tell me what they look for is not the news coming out of China. What they look for is what is censored coming out of China, because they know what's censored is actually the truth. The amazing thing is this passage here is one of the passages that the Jewish people are not allowed to read. Another passage is Daniel 9, when it talks about the timing that the Lord was going to come back. And it fulfilled it perfectly to the week of Yeshua's entrance into Jerusalem, his death on the cross. And this is one of those passages. To who has believed what he has heard from us, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? And so now the Lord goes ahead and gives you who this arm is. Who is the revelation of this arm? And he talks about him and that he grew up, that we beheld him, there's no beauty to be seen upon him. He was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. One that was with whom men hid their faces when he was despised, and we esteemed not. Look at this. Surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows, yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God, and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities, and upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace. And with his wounds we are healed. All we are like sheep have gone astray. We have turned every one to his own way, and the Lord has laid upon him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed, and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. Like a lamb that is led to the slaughter, like a sheep that is before its shears is silent, so he opened not his mouth. And by oppression and judgment he taken away. And as for his generation who considered that he was cut off from the land of the living, stricken for the transgression of my people, and they made his grave with the wicked and with the rich man in his death. Although he had done no violence and there was no deceit in his mouth, yet it was the will of the Lord to crush him. He has put him to grief when his soul makes an offering for guilt. He shall see his offspring. He shall prolong his days, and the will of the Lord shall prosper in his hand. And out of the anguish of his soul he shall see and be satisfied. By his knowledge shall the righteous one, my servant, make many be accounted righteous. And he shall bear their iniquities. Therefore I will divide him a portion with the many. He shall divide the spoil with the strong. He poured out his soul unto death and was numbered with the transgressors. Yet he bore the sin of many and makes intercession for the transgressors. That passage is Isaiah 53 is actually the revelation of who the arm of the Lord is. Have you figured out who the arm is? The arm that is called to gather his sheep. And it says in John, I am the good shepherd, and I'm gathering my sheep. It says that all judgment is given to the Son. It says the judgment is given to the Son. And we know that the Lord is coming back, and he's going to rule and reign on this earth for 1,000 years. We know that it was the Lord that came 2,000 years ago that died on the cross for our sins. It's him that makes intercession for us. It's him that makes us righteous before the Lord himself. And here it is, the revelation of the arm of God is a revelation that we all have to make. Because each one of us has to have our own relationship. The relationship that we're talking about has to be individual. It can't be, my father believed, my mother believed, my grandmother believed. I believed it when I was a kid. No, it has to be intimate. It has to be personal. It has to be something intimate. Why? Because this is the Savior of the world that died for you. And when he died on the cross, isn't that something to give thanks for? I'm sure that each one of us can go ahead and look around the world and say, my goodness, I don't know what to give thanks for. There's a lot of things that are really wrong, but the one thing you should always give thanks for, right, is the steadfast love endures forever. And so we continue. Whoops. Oh, wait, go back. What did you do to me here? Okay. Hey. Oh, that isn't the last slide. Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to have to wing it now. Anyway, So the passage of Isaiah 136, there are, let me see how many passages, how many verses. There are 26 verses. And in all 26 verses, it goes through talking about God's deliverance, God's salvation, God, how he delivered him from different kings. He delivered him. He remembers us in our lowest state. He remembers us, and he rescues us from our foes. And the last verse says this: give thanks to the God of heaven, for his steadfast love endures forever. The enduring love of God. If you can focus on that, and you can focus on the fact that he loved you from the foundation of the world, that you were created in his love, that you are the beloved, when you get the heart of thanksgiving ready, you cannot be thankful and be proud at the same time. You cannot be thankful and feel entitled at the same time. You can't be thankful and be unforgiving at the same time. You can't be thankful and jealous at the same time. You can't be thankful and self-pitying at the same time. You can't be thankful and worried at the same time. You can't be thankful and conscious at the same time. You can't be thankful and bitter at the same time. You can't be thankful and be offended at the same time. You can't be thankful and dishonoring at the same time. You can't be thankful and selfish at the same time. And you truly can't be thankful and be prayerless at the same time. Because thanksgiving is a confession. It's a confession of who God is. It's a confession and remind ourselves of what he's already done. It's this relationship, this intimate relationship that God is trying to establish with us. And in order to truly have an intimate relationship, you got to know who he truly is. And if you don't know who he truly is, then how can you truly be thankful? There's a lot of people that are really focused on how bad things are right now. That's what the Bible said it was going to be like in the last days. What you have to remind yourself is that thanksgiving is actually a picture of Sukkot. And the picture of Sukkot, or the Feast of Tabernacles, is actually looking towards something. It's looking to the marriage supper of the Lamb. When he gathers the harvest of the world, when he separates the goats from the sheep, and that's a picture of separating mankind at the end of the age, there's only two paths. There's a path to heaven and a path to hell. There is no middle ground. And when he separates, he makes that final separation, he separates the goats from the sheep. He says, look, I prepared something from you, from the foundation of the world. I'm preparing a feast for you. I'm preparing this feast. And guess what? When this day happens, ready? There'll be no more sorrow, no more crying, no more pain. At this time, when this happens, when God tabernacles with us, it will be a day that transforms everything. Thanksgiving is about reminding us who God truly is. He is the King of Kings. He is the Lord of Lords. He created us from the foundation of the world. He created us to do something special in this world. We have a message to share. The message of thanksgiving is the message of hope. When we understand that God has loved us from the foundation, it's very easy to share the love of God. Because this steadfast love endures forever. So Abba, Father, I ask you, Lord, would just seal this word. I ask you, Father, to pour upon this whole congregation just a fresh outpouring of your spirit. Just a heart of thanksgiving, Father. We say todah. We say thank you, Abba. We thank you, Abba, for creating us. We thank you, Abba, for delivering us from our enemies. But we especially thank you, Abba, that you sent us our son, that you sent your son to die for us, that we have now a path to heaven, that we have now the way prepared for us from the foundation of the world, that you prepared for us something special. Help us keep focused on what you have for us, and help us to walk this walk in a way of thanksgiving. We thank you. B'shem Yeshua HaMashiach. Amen.